Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
Hey, Startup Hustlers. This is your guest host, Ron Chigueta, the last of a four-part series on biotech and synbio startups at iAccelerate. iAccelerate's the accelerator that I run, which works with promising food tech and biotech startups. And I am really pleased to be here on this last installment with one of my advisors and an advisor that I work with through iAccelerate. But I'm going to introduce him in a minute. I want to take a moment first to thank Fullscale for sponsoring today's podcast. Go learn how Fullscale helps you build a winning software team quickly and affordably by visiting fullscale.io. Okay, so our guest today is a great pleasure to always a great pleasure to talk to Ryan. Ryan Patel. Ryan's a world-renowned go-to authority on global business, political economy, and corporate governance. You may have seen him on Bloomberg, on CNN, on Fox Business News, and he's pretty ubiquitous business advisor on, at least on the West Coast, but he's worked all over the world. He's an expert in scaling businesses. He's worked for startups to publicly traded customers. He has taken products international. He has a deep knowledge in strategic global market development, concept scalability, digital transformation, global trade, consumer-driven marketing, and leadership development. And he's a thought leader in the global business realm across a whole bunch of industries, including food. As I can attest, really a great guy to talk to, just really a lot of fun. Ryan, thanks for coming on the podcast and taking the time out of your busy schedule. A slightly less telegenic experience than usual, but we appreciate you coming down. So do you want to give people what's your bio in terms of what you do? Like, I think people sort of hear global strategist in business, but maybe we should get into, you know, sort of some details there on what does that mean to people, you think?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because people try to put me in a box, or, you know, I think people are a lot more open. And if I had to put my skill set, it's to scale things. And, you know, and it touches a lot of different things. Like you mentioned, I did it for help scale three publicly traded companies. Then I took a startup to global and then had an exit. You know, now I feel I live in kind of multiple buckets, right? I sit on, you know, boards, you know, different types of boards, right? I sit on the, you know, advisory board for MasterCard Innovation, Drucker School of Management, you know, and some other CPG companies. And you've got, you know, the speaking piece, as you mentioned, you know, being able to speak at Davos and, you know, HP Innovation, you know, leading their conversation with the future. And, you know, then, you know, being in the media and being one of the points for the newsroom on business breaking news and being, you know, talking about trade wars and tech and startups and really tying complex ideas to simple things. And, you know, and then obviously teaching courses at Claremont Graduate University on global leadership. Like, for me, I just want to be able to make an impact. And, you know, it's kind of that governance aspect of just helping and assisting things that I didn't have. And I do keep it that simple, but you know, I think we can scale things globally. We're so much more interconnected than ever before. And my experience has allowed me to provide these opportunities to do that. And that's what gets me up every day to be able to make that impact.
And you always have a lot of energy. Despite all the fact you're doing, that's a sign that you're doing something, that you're living a good life as well as having an exciting career. I definitely identify with that. I mean, you're also really easy to talk to. I mean, it is your ability to sort of bring things down to sort of like the topic at hand, operationally, tactically, what's happening right now, and still be connected to these global movements. I think that's something I always found to be, amazing when I deal with you.
Well, no, thank you. I kind of feel like when you give me that compliment, it's like, I didn't have a choice though. That's how I was through my career. It's like, here, go figure it out. Oh, by the way, your job description is this, but too bad, you got to do all these other things. And, you know, I think when you're kind of trained through that, you see with a different lens. And I got, you know, you can say I got lucky that I did realize really early in my career how things were interconnected, that it wasn't in silos. And, you know, in the old days, it was told that, you know, you're supposed to, you know, stay at one job and be there for 25 plus years. And let's just be honest, I wanted that. Like, I actually really wanted that, but that wasn't in my cards.
And that's what happened to me too.
And that's wasn't in my cards. And now everybody's like, oh my God, it's so great that you're doing all this. I was like, I didn't really have a choice, but yeah, it worked out that way.
You know, when I was on the podcast with Matt DeCourcy before, like, he basically described business very well. He sort of basically said, and he was talking about startup, but I think it's true for all business. Like, I think he basically said that, you make plans, but then you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And it's really about sort of being able to respond to whatever happens. And there's all the unexpected things that happen that really makes success in business and life and in general. We were going to talk about what you did this week, but I want to say something else. Oh, well, hey, well, let's talk about what you did this week. You just came back from giving a talk, and I thought that was fascinating. I work with you in the food world. You're actually very accomplished in food. You've worked with Panda Express. You sort of took Pinkberry International. Those are a couple of my favorite stories. But you were working in fintech this week.
Yeah, you know, I keynoted one of the larger associations for all the credit union CEOs, right? And VP staffs. And, you know, the title of the talk was around the future of the financial services sector. So I was given trends and macro trends, not just within financial services, but in other places from supply chain, food, things that, you know, because at the end of the day, it's consumer related, right? If you think of credit unions specifically, they are all about the community, which is many for startups, right? It's about building a community from start. And they've been doing it for a long time. And I used an example, funny enough, around fintech and startups. And usually when you tell larger organizations about how startups are coming or coming behind, and, you know, either they dismiss you, they just kind of go, well, we're too big, they can't catch up. Or, you know, in the last couple of years, it was like, well, yeah, we got to figure something more innovative so we can beat them. Now I was talking about collaboration. I was talking about, you know, I've always talked about it, but I think it was more receptive than ever before, Ron. Like, Finn, you know, hey, we can figure out how to partner with startups. It's not, you know, because I know this from the startup realm, it's so hard for anyone to even take your phone call, even to listen to That's you, right. to say, hey, I got a product that I want you to listen to. And I think there are more willingness to open and listen. That doesn't make it easier. That you have to mm-hmm. still sell and tell the story of the model. But I think people's eyes are a lot more open going, well, we've got to move with the consumer. We've got to move to be more convenience. We've got to move to be more secure with our data. So all these things that I just mentioned to you, no matter what industry you're on, all matters, right? These are questions that, you know, startup founders in food and whatever you want, you have to have answers to this regardless.
It's really changed a lot. I think in the last 5 years, like when I started off investing just 7 years ago, it was really hard to get people's attention. But now there's a lot of rapt attention from established players. And I think it's because everybody's getting touched. I mean, that punch in the face is happening. I was just reading, I think I was reading a newspaper in the financial center section that like the banks are is it true? Like, did I read this right? The banks are actually sort of getting kind of like their roles getting disrupted because so many people are taking on banking roles. So many of these little companies are trying to replace banks, and it's easier to start a bank than ever and cheaper. And so the larger banks are wondering, like, well, what are we going to be doing in 10, 20 years? Did I hear that right, you think?
I mean, the banking industry as a whole, right? I mean, there's a lot of regulation involved in it. I think that the banking, of the way we view banking, is going to change the view. Like, that's for sure. That doesn't mean that they're going to go away, especially these larger banks. But
I'll find something.
But if you think about how, and this is how I like to use the example, think about payments. Think about how payments has evolved over the last 5 to 6 years worldwide, not just in the U.S., right? If you look at a stat, digital wallet, you know, in the U.S., it's only used, the digital wallet for payments only used for, like, I don't know, 11 to 16%. In Asia, China specific, it's 70%. Latin America, it's north of 40%. So that means that trend is coming, it is here. It's not going anywhere. It's going that way. So what does that mean? That means a processing fee, having, you know, payment immediately, transfers immediately, that's all pushing forward, which does challenge the traditional way of banking. And that includes loans too, right? Just look at the loan process now for, you know, if you wanted to go raise funds and how fast it would come, it's faster than ever before. And I think
click a button and then there's like, you're approved.
Yeah. And I think if you see some of these, micro trends, it is going to push the macro trends in the banking industry, because that consumers and customers, like all of us, are asking for it, right? And it's not just one voice, it's a whole group of voices. And that's really how disruption will maintain, right? It's like COVID. You know, some companies have learned that, hey, you know, I want to be more empathetic and I want to do these things for, you know, be more remote. Well, if you were saying that 2 years ago, now you're coming outside the pandemic and saying, well, you know, we're not that anymore. Well, pick your values, and it's a longevity piece. Pick it and then stand with it. Don't go back and forth. Just, you know, decide so it's clear for everybody.
And I think another thing that's just sort of make this a more general sort of discussion too. I think one of the things is that, like, as this disruption is starting to hit a lot, or innovation starting to hit a lot of different industries and a lot of different people, like at this conference you're at, I imagine a lot of people are still not quite feeling it. And they're really not reacting to it yet. Is that right? Like,
I think everybody, you think about all, you know, I think everyone is a little shell shocked, not just in general, right? You moved so fast. I think there was a great example of, like, you just got things done. You had to get things done. You're working from home. You felt like you were working more hours. I mean, not, you probably were working more hours. Mm-hmm. All hands were on deck because everybody's, you know, jobs were on the line. Everybody wanted to get revenue. Now you're on the other side. Hopefully we're on the process. Eventually, you know, we're going to recover. We're going to see some, you know, ups and downs still. So we still need some resiliency, but there's a different type of outlook of, like, okay, now what? Can't do 100 things at the same time. What should we be focusing on to know that we put ourselves in the right position? Cause we've survived, but now what? You know, now AR and VR, and you talk about all these other things that are popping up in training and aspects, and it's not like they just popped up in the pandemic. I want to be clear. These things have been going on for multiple years.
People just don't, their nerve endings are dead on it or something. Like, I guess this last couple of weeks, and just to catch the viewers up, like, we're recording this in early November. So this is just the week after a lot of the commentary on Tesla, for instance, started sort of flipping. Before it was like, oh, GM's going to sort of come into this and they're going to sort of blow this little company away, and they don't, this overpriced and all this. And the commentary the last week or so has sort of been like, you know, this Tesla is very real and looks like they are really going to sell many cars. And the stock has just, like, jumped up, I think, from $800 or $900 to $1,200 in a week. And I use this as a way to get my kids into stock. So I got them, and I have a little app that I can actually have accounts for my kids. And we all bought some Tesla stock together before the leap.
Well,
they like stocks now.
It's interesting that you said, I mean, I don't really watch too much TV or read. I mean, I've been talking, as you know, I've been on air talking about Tesla since it was, I still remember when it was almost $4.20. I was live on CNN talking about that, about, you know, how Elon tweeted and he wasn't supposed to do that. And I'm like, yeah, this stock is, it's got, you know, I don't, the EV industry is on fire. I mean, it's been in fire. That was 2 years ago when I said it. So when you say, well, people are like,
really didn't listen to you, though. That must have been strange.
Well, that's why when I'm hearing you going, oh, people thinking about Tesla, I'm not thinking just about Tesla. I'm thinking about who are the next star. Look at Rivian, that's backed by Amazon, supposed to be a $6 billion valuation, according to the Wall Street Journal. Look what Lucid just went IPO through a SPAC. You know, you think about Polestar through the GGPI SPAC is about to probably go IPO sometime next year is what the rumors are. I mean, these are, when they come out, Ron, these are billion-dollar valuations. These are not, I mean, yes, they're just valuation. They're a number, but it's because the demand is there.
And they're very real, too. Like, I actually, you know, I hadn't heard about Polestar, and I saw one drive past.
They have a product. They actually have a product. This is not like something.
Selling cars.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lucid, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, Polestar is a lot further advanced than Lucid was, Lucid is when they IPO'd. So I can't even imagine, if Lucid IPO'd, I think as high, I think they got up to 40 to 50 bucks or whatever. I think it's around 20 something now. I don't know. Again, I'm not speculating anything. It's just, the markets are crazy anyway. So anyone listening to this, make sure you know your fundamentals. Make sure you read the profit and you know, you want companies that make money. And this is no different than any startups, right? When you're pitching, that's what you should be looking at. You can't be buying the hype. Don't buy our hype. You should be reading the actual details of their quarterly earnings and those kind of things. Actually, it's good practice to actually, Ron. It was a good segue.
It is. We can transition towards something like more startup and biotech now. But like, I mean, the real thing here is the real thread there for me is that if you sort of like understand something fundamentally, you don't have to rely on the news, right? You can actually make cogent decisions and do well in the market.
So I didn't hear, it's funny. I didn't hear any of, you know, you got that feeling of the last week. I just tuned out of it. I'm just like, yeah, this thing is, I almost feel like, well, it's too, not too late is the right word, but like, yeah, you're, if you're not for,
I mean, I've been starting a Tesla for a while, but what happened was, is a bunch of the news, like on several of the newscasts, and I won't name any names, but some of the analysts, you know, the YouTubers sort of say, well, you know, and I think it is pretty much true that, like, you know, the large broadcast networks, they get a revenue, significant revenue from car ads.
That's true.
But they get no revenue from Tesla ads. And so they were being fairly skeptical about it. And then they kind of stopped about 2 weeks ago. And so this is something I look for. There's two trends. There's the Ryan Patel trend where values are like, hey, you know what? This is like a $100 billion company and it's priced at about $5 billion. It's not overpriced. And then there's and the Cathie Woods, like the Cathie Woods people. And then there's other people who are like looking for social signal. And those social signals trail like a gigantic amount of time. And that's what kicked in this last week is that the general public attitude for some of the more just people who are just basically doing opinion leading, they flipped. And so all these people came in. It was, compared to where it's been, it's not a big bump for the stock, but 30% in 1 week is still pretty good. But I think it's a transition in the way to see the stock.
Yeah, no, it's changed the way we, I mean, you just talk about young generation of wanting to be interesting and asking. Like your kids are going to ask the right questions when they get older about, well, what's the PE? What's the future look like? What's the competitors look like? What's their market cap? I mean, these are basic things that, you know, I see even in pitches doesn't come across right in the startup realm. And you know, you can tell if somebody was just reading off a slide or somebody really understands it, or it's okay not to have the answers either, by the way. We don't all know the answers. I don't even know the answers either, but at least you can put some logic to go why and how you're thinking about it, and then people can see it.
That's right. It's a very, you know, it's a strange place. It's great to talk with people who are in the same place as me. Like, you know, I think you and I live in a world where a lot of trends are very clear, and we sort of like operate on a level where the trends are they're pretty much established. But for a lot of people, they're like, what's gonna, you know, it's just not clear this is gonna happen. And it's sort of isolating in a way.
Well, I mean, the disconnect is, even though we may think it is a trend or we think it's going to happen, the disconnect is the operationally, how is it going to occur, right? Because, you know, that's huge, right? Of how you get it to the masses. You may have the best idea, but not be able to get it to the masses or operationally execute. Then it doesn't matter. You can have the best product, and if you can't do it right or give the right experience, it doesn't matter.
and then does the money come in? Because the money follows those sort of like social sort of like signals. So that's something that, I mean, like, I actually, why don't we move toward food? Because this is a, let's show the food side of Ryan. But like, I like to compare the biofuels movement of the early 2000s with sort of the food movement today. So just for the listeners who haven't been aware of it, there was this big idea around 2004, 2006, where people said like, we can make microbes make fuel. We don't have to pull it out of the ground. And it'll be closed carbon loop. The carbon will come from the atmosphere into the little microbes, and then it'll get turned into gasoline, and then the cars will burn it, and that'll sort of like stop that CO2 leak, right? And it was a great idea, but there was never any public uptake from it, you know? And what happens was the companies were sort of desperate for money, and so the petroleum companies came and gave them money, and then they took the patents and all the other property, and they just folded it in. Now they, as electric car trend goes up, they may actually turn back to those patents now. But it kind of just withered. It substantially, it never turned into a wave. Whereas food is really different. Food is, I think $10 billion was invested in food innovation startups this last year. At least between $4 and $10 billion, let's say. It's just been this huge wave. And 5 years ago when I got started, it was like $5 million. And so we're all hitting that kind of social awareness trend right now. But we're also seeing a lot of other things that are sort of moving that trend forward in food right now. You want to talk a little bit about what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the consumers is a lot smarter. Then, you know, and what I mean smarter, I mean they're asking better questions. They're reading packages details. They're reading nutritional facts. No one is as scared as when you go into a restaurant and go, does this have X, Y, and Z? Am I, you know, I know for me, decades ago, I used to be embarrassed to ask, hey, does this thing have X or Y? Because they will look at you. Now it's a lot more normal, and I think it people don't mind asking it, you know, or answering it, and there's a lot more options when it's vegetarian or you know cage free, whatever you want to mention. People are asking those questions because they're educating themselves. So there's a baseline to that, right? This is not just companies educating consumers. Consumers are wanting to educate themselves, and they're doing that. So at the same time, that just makes what a better conversation for these food brands to meet at the level for them. So words just don't. It's great if you say you're one thing, but actions matter, right? How you look at those things. And food sustainability is very interesting as a conversation because, you know, what I'm seeing is that you have to be more transparent. Transparency is something that, you know, yes, we know you got to build trust, but, you know, when you're transparent, you're going to have some successes and some mistakes.
The consumer has gone from trust to trust, but verify.
I don't think we're going backwards. I think
we're going to just verify.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to embrace that. If you embrace that full force, if you're a startup or a founder, you immediately have that trust until you break it.
You know, actually, what's happened is, first of all, I want to give a shout out to the younger consumers. Because the Gen Zs and Gen Ys, they're pushing most of this trend, and some of these older execs who are sitting in the bigger companies, they don't see them very clearly, and so they don't understand that the market's shifting substantially. But I was just at University of California, Davis, which is yesterday. It's one of the best schools in the food schools on the planet, and they have this student course that the students are basically putting together on alternative proteins and plant-based foods. They are completely engaged. Like, they are pushing the system to actually create a program on lab-grown meat there. It's the first in the world of its kind. And it's all coming from the will of the younger people, you know? That's usually not how things work in academia. I spend a lot of time there. That's amazing to me.
I mean, I would even take a foot more. The elementary school kids are learning about sustainability and talk about it. There's a I don't know if you've heard of the Crop Trust. They run the Seed Vault in Norway. And it's they push.
Tell them about the Seed Vault.
So this 8-year-old did a report on it, and it's on there. If you go at, you know, I think it's at Crop Trust. If you look at their, he put a whole report out together with chapters about why food diversity of seeds matter, and that all the world's seeds of the specific crops are in this food vault in Norway, which is at a temperature in the mountain. So if famine hits, devastation, or civil unrest, you don't lose that crop specifically to that country. So even where countries don't even like each other and they don't want to talk to each other, at the seed vault, their seeds are next to their other seeds. And it's an amazing thing, because, you know, they're talking about how crop diversity matters, because, you know, if you keep doing the same plant, I don't want to get the details. You know, I don't need to tell you, you know, this is going
to, I don't even want to think about what I was doing at that age. I think I was eating my own boogers.
Such a great report from an 8-year-old that you just kind of go, wow, I didn't even know that. And you could tell this wasn't something, it was passion from these kids. And this just, that generation is just going to take us, you know, as long as, you know, which we need to be open and embrace, and not just to listen, actively listen to incorporate all this. And that's what longevity, that's what it is.
That's such an unusual thing too. Like to have, I mean, there's always been a lot of lip praise for the young people who speak out, but actually they actually are kind of taking over now. I don't think people are really under, that's another thing I don't think people are really aware of, how much it's being driven by young people right now.
To your point, you know, that's for me, you know, when I sit on these boards or advisory boards that are scaling, like, especially that you've got to bring that, you know, you've got to challenge these notions. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're paid there to do.
I guess so. But if you can't see them, how can you adopt them? Like, I think.
Well, if you don't understand them completely, right?
The age that's driving this is very much still kind of invisible. They're not spending a lot of money. They don't have a lot of their own money, but they will be dominant in 10 years or 5 years. And everybody knows it, but they still can't act on it. You know, it's coming along quickly, but now, and I think it's, I think anybody moves 3 or 4 years ago, like maybe we did, like, I think that's going to be to our benefit. I just want to say really quickly, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Thanks to Matt and Jessica and everybody for helping us put this together. Okay, so we're probably going to have that. This has been great. I could imagine it going on for quite a long time, but let's change it up a little bit. And so, you know, you're working with several startups now, as well as the multinationals now. And you're an advisor for some of them. And let's talk about, for the hustlers, like, what does a startup need from your point of view? Like, what do you think that is a developmental sort of issue that you kind of see when you work with them?
Well, I don't need to say anything. They're usually telling me. it's interesting, because I think, one, having self-awareness about how the skill sets that you're good at and that you're not good at. I see a lot of founders say, well, I'm not really good at this. Like, okay, so what are you doing to get better? Right? Like, it's not just recognize. It's great. You got to recognize step one. Step two, how do you execute on those things? So that's one. And I think the ability to, you know, pivot in certain aspects that you're keeping an open-mindedness. And again, I think many do, but those are some traps that if you are not open-minded in certain things, there, you know, that'll be a trap.
Yeah.
So the other aspect that I see, and I did this talk actually for the NASDAQ, it was funny, the whole talk was around advisory boards. And I couldn't tell you, I think there's a shift of how that's being used, because before, you know, people were, you know, using the advisory board as employees, right? Hey, I put you on board, you go do sales for me. And that's fine, that's okay, but this is not really what's meant to have that. You know, when a company goes from seed or pre-seed to seed to series A, that's a lot of jumps right there from revenue and going fast. And what worked for you in the beginning, you've got to identify and have people who are going to challenge you and look at different, not just trends, but look at different things that you can learn from other industries. And I think that that's a trend that I think is starting to be a little more savvier, where, okay, here's my industry, this is what we do, but like, how else can we do it better and look at other places? And I think understanding that and incorporating that, and, you know, all the words about speed and finding, you know, Ron, you and I talk about this. Yeah. When you do raise money, finding the right partner, like not all money is equal. And finding the right partner investor who believes in your mission, but also knows your leadership style, know how you want to grow, being on the same page. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that there's been people go, well, I took this money and, you know, now I need to figure out how to please them. This is not my vision. And, you know, it does slow the growth down. And part of it is you got to spend that time up front, meaning on your
relational match. You have to grow in your relationships and how you relate to people in a way that's mind blowing when you're starting to scale out.
And part of that too, is that bad experience, if you had a bad experience before, you makes you a little bit triggerless if going forward. And it's like, well, I had this and I don't trust this. And like, yeah, that I completely understand.
Yeah. I mean, it's that punch in the face again. At some point, it's amazing.
You keep trying to punch people in the face. I'm gonna tell everyone, just, you know, avoid duck, look around. If you want to hook right back, just move to the left and right. So every time Ron says punch you in the face,
you gotta keep moving. Something unexpected will happen, or they'll be faced with a challenge they have really no point of reference from. And the natural thing to do is freeze. I've seen these companies running full speed and suddenly they just stop. You know, and it's really dramatic. But I think one thing I always wish I don't know, I've never really said it, but I keep thinking it's like, is that there's no bonus at the exit for doing something completely by yourself. You know, and I think that having, that's why I like working, with the accelerator and doing advisor work, is because it's always different. People always have their own challenges. But another thing about startups people forget is this, you know, you can hear about someone pulling in $6 or $20 million or $150 million, but by definition, a startup is always poor. It almost just barely has enough money to get along because it has to go to investors to get it. You're not making your own money if you're having investors, which means you need to be real careful how you spend it. And it's not going to be, you're not going to be spending freely like a company that's making its own profits and just spending those for R&D, you know? And so advisors are key to learn things you have no experience in.
Well, I mean, I think also too, and I'm not saying everyone, hey, go create one, but it's like, I wish somebody would have told me this when I was younger. It's like, you know, everyone goes go network. That's great. But why don't you go network with quality, right? Spend time mm-hmm. where you can learn from other people just like you wouldn't have access, you know, be very strategic about where and who you spend your time networking with, because that means you're putting yourself in the best position because you see some of that trends, right? You see something that's different and that you're pushing yourself on. I mean, it's almost like you're giving yourself an education.
That's a good way of putting it. I think you should be looking, I've always, and this is how we met, but I'm always looking to network with people who clearly know something I don't know, you know, and it's partly about just looking at yourself and saying, hey, I need to keep growing up. I have seen teams get to that point where they feel like they are grown up. And I just don't see.
But I do want to stop you here there, Ron, because you do something and I think others do too. I think we all can add benefit to each other.
Yeah.
And that
it's
you've got to keep that in mind though, because you know, it's a two-way relationship to the degree, and the great ones, the great people, I've told you this, like when you give benefit to somebody, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, it could be anything that's beneficial to the other person. It just shows that's your right. character, like, hey, this person knows what they're talking about, they're willing to connect, they're willing to help. You know, it just creates a relationship that's a different way. As long as it's genuine, right? You still
be faithful. Yeah, no, yeah. Well, sometimes it's artificial, but it can still be, you know, as long as you're clear about it. I mean, it's better than nothing. But yeah, I mean, people really, I can't tell you how many people, I know we both have the same thing. It's like a lot of people come to me and really what the conversation is, they want free advice. And they never stop. I don't think they really think it's like, you know, that's not a conversation where I can give freely. And I shouldn't have to feel that I should. And I don't really, you know, I think it's just a lack of experience that like, hey, you know, you want to get something, you have a relationship with somebody. It's a direct exchange of human beings. It isn't just sort of like me just trying to like run in there and just like ask a bunch of questions and come home and build my business from that.
So are you talking about the people who just say, hey, can you just give me your email so I can send you the deck? And then they never hear about you. They just want to send you the deck and they never hear back ever.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I like to give good advice. And people ask me very pointed questions that are extremely valuable when I do interviews. And I'll do that for about 20 minutes or so just to show what I can do. But, you know, nobody, about maybe one out of three people calls and I'm like, I'm not sure they got that. Like in 20 minutes, I can do this much. If I work with you 100 hours, you're going to get like 180 times that. I don't think any people really, some people never put that together, which I find interesting. But you know, I think that is that's a developmental thing. You learn that sooner or later.
Yeah. I mean, and I think people also don't realize that we know, right? If we go, Hey, we just want to get a call. We just want to sell you a thing and then get off. Well, that doesn't really, I mean, that's,
I'm not going to name names, but like it, you know, that, but like people keep behaving that way all the way up. Like it's not just startup people. I've met almost $1 billion.
Let me be clear. I'm not complaining. I think I'm just saying, hey, you know, there are, you know, when you do that, and sometimes maybe we do, I mean, we know the other person knows that, okay, this person just needs this and that's fine. You can go and I'm happy to forward the deck to whomever, which is, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, that was the purpose of the relationship, right?
And I'm going to have to handle that in a way that I make sure that you don't damage my relationships with these people I'm forwarding the deck to. And, you know, if you're really thoughtful about that, you know, if you're looking to turn the company into a $10 million company by introductions, then, you know, I think you should realize that you're asking for something valuable too. Like, I don't, you know, there's a lot of people who will do it for cash. And maybe they won't do such a great job. Maybe they will, you know, but I think it's fair to say that you're getting something out of it. So, you know, that is how it's going to have to be from now on. I mean, with all your business relationships. So, you know, help the people who are, you know, work with the people who are helping get started too. That's true, man. Interesting. All right. So let's see. This seems a good time to break. So actually, I want to get back to this, you know, advisors. Like we could talk about, there's a couple of things. Like you often go on boards, but sometimes you do sort of direct advice for companies. Let's talk about how that works longer term when you do have a relationship. Like you have a couple of stories that maybe you can tell about how that works with you and sort of how you engage people.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's interesting, right? Because I have a wide range of company sizes, right? You know, I could go to a larger company and sit on their aspects, but you know, the sweet spot from even C to B, I mean, there's a lot of different revenues, right? Just because you're a seed round doesn't mean you're not making money, or you could be making money, or a Series A company. And so for me, I always look at the bigger picture. It's like you see all these companies right before they pre-IPO, then they go and try to hire all these board members and get everything set, which is fair. But what if you can get some of that quality earlier in the life of the company? It would be so beneficial. And like for me, I love, it's not just being a part of quarterly meetings, especially with younger companies. You know, get on a call once a month. And you know, usually the ones that I'm with, they're so efficient with their time. They'll have all the questions ready to go and say, hey, we're doing X, Y, and Z. What do you think? You know, we're thinking this, Ryan, but in your experience, you did this. Why? We're having a, you know, our ET executive team's having, we're fighting on something here. What, you know, what is it? You know, what are we not missing? You know, those are really pinpointed questions that are like, you know, I'm not trying to be in the business because if you let the leaders run it. You're just there for that. Governance is what I call it. It's a different type of governance, which I enjoy. Mm-hmm. But usually board execs that are on publicly traded companies, they usually can't be prop, you know, not majority of the time won't be great advisors or board advisors for startups because they're right. so higher up and to that degree. And their experience maybe just be Fortune 500 experience.
It's a strategic level of thing they're helping you with.
And unfortunately for me, you know, I've seen it on both sides and seen the struggle of like, oh, scaling from, you know, 5 million to 50 million is really different, right? From
that's
one,
really
one,
vulnerable
one
time for a startup too. Like when you're just starting to make money, it looks like real money, but the goal is to make 100 times that. There's a lot of stuff that happens there. And I think you'd probably, I mean, I think it's better to be asking 100 questions than pretending you know and just sort of like learning on your own. I just can't imagine how stressful that period is.
But it is. But it is stressful, you know, because you're going to be mm-hmm. compromising something when you go from 1 to 5 and 5 to 50, because if something mm-hmm. is going to change, more than likely. I almost can assure you that when you started saying, hey, this is something that we can never compromise, this is who we are. I'm not talking about values. I'm just talking about certain ways that you do things. And when you get to 5 million, you're like, oh, how do we go global? How do we get to, you know, this country in the MENA region? Or how do we, you know, why is it different? Well, we said we weren't going to do this before, but now we are doing it. Why? And what can you learn? And so I think if you, again, if you from 1 to 5 million could start to think about the things that you're going to start preparing when you get to the next, it's going to make your transition so much easier versus, hey, we're at 5 million now. We're ready to go. It doesn't work that way, as always.
I think I have a good sort of like way of talking about that particular difficulty too, because up until that certain point where you're really starting to scale, everything you're allowed to do things really expensive. Like the first million, well, company, like a company that raised $15 million and achieves $10 million in sales, right? That's expensive. Clearly that's a company that would normally die. but that's a lot of startups. But the next 10 or 20 million, it's got to cost like 2 or 3 million.
Yeah.
Because you have to make a profit. And so all the mindset you have about how you're deploying this, how you're actually doing sales, everything's got to be restructured because you got to make a profit all of a sudden. Yeah. That's a big transition.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's just different phases, different stages. And, you know, you want to, I mean, let me be very honest about this. You need to have a diverse perspective and viewpoints around you, you know, and that includes gender equity and having, you know, different experiences,
that's
backgrounds.
Right.
These things matter. If you're trying to do a quick buck and try to sell, you know, 30, I mean, I'm talking about, you want to build something longevity with people that matters and have a higher valuation. These things will help you in the long run.
And everybody who's interested in startups, I'd remember, you got to constantly remember, like, yeah, I've raised $20 million. Yeah, my company on paper is worth $250 million, but I haven't actually taken any money home.
Yeah.
that's I think that people just sort of have to remember all that is fake until it's real.
Yeah.
And that last stage of getting real is super important. And we all hear about these wonderful companies doing that, like Tesla, right?
Yeah.
Like Pinkberry. But for every one of them, there's like 20 or 30 of them that you never hear about and really never want to hear about because they just completely just died.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be in that. That's a very stressful place to be in one of those situations. And so experience, my friends, is the way to get through that. And actually all the startups are looking for experienced people all of a sudden, but they may not be used to sort of like transitioning into them. And advisor board will help a lot with that. Is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and you know, when you pick people, you're thinking about how it fits overall, right? Like you said, diversity perspective. You don't, if you're a food company or I was picking the health insurance, you don't want all seven people around you from the same dang industry. Let's just be honest. You want people that who can challenge each other and you get something. And you know, the younger company you are, you can add the skills that you know. What are you needing more of, right? It was funny you said leadership. I said leadership. More recently has been popping up when people, founders and CEOs of that are even larger companies are saying, I need this. I need this. I don't need technically a coach, but I want something else. I want these things that I need to get better. And I want this type of experience. And that's, for me, that's eye-opening because just imagine the value of someone's opening their mind and willing to put resources and time to doing something like that, Ron. It's going to have a huge impact on their organization.
Planning ahead for something you know nothing about is also very time consuming.
Yeah.
You know, for the listeners, if you've been listening to the whole series, we've had three companies on before this conversation. Two of them are currently in blitz scaling. They're actually scaling product to revenue right now. And you know, things are going so fast. Can you imagine trying to move volume and start to get your sales going at the same time, having to plan for that rollout phase where you have to change your culture and start to be more efficient in how you market and improve your margin and actually meet all your goals? That's coming right on the tail of that. And I see a lot of companies just switching modes and saying, okay, now it's time to hire a bunch of experienced people. And they don't really have a track record or they're not prepared for it. And that's disorienting. It can still work, but why take the chance, yeah. Right? I mean, why not be better prepared? Because you know it's coming.
It is. Truthfully, I'm so excited about this waves of startups, Ron. I really am, because mm-hmm. it's just a lot more sophistication, a lot more eyes open, a lot more kind of some, you know, seeing the bigger impact, right? When people go, well, I want to make an impact with my, some people are struggling with, because I have this product and service, but I want to do more in the community. I may be doing something else, but how do I give back? How do I talk about financial literacy? How do I train and get more healthier food to younger? Like, I love that, Ron. Even if their product and service has nothing to do with maybe the direct impact, they're trying to find a way to tie it in. And for me, it is inspiring to see that, you know, people are putting their hands up, raising their hands and go, yeah, it's great if I get a $500 million exit, but if I feel I can't do other things that I can leave and look back as a legacy, you know, I want to do it the right way. And, you know, that's role models right there.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree. I love my people because I know that we're all in there for really fantastic reasons. And I think this is getting back to the earlier point you made about relationships. You know, if you really want to connect with people who are really going to help you achieve your goals and really understand your vision and help you achieve those goals, I mean, you know, form relationships with them. And that's how really great things are done. You know, just couldn't agree more. Well, I can't believe we've been talking for quite a while now, 45 minutes. So I know you've got other things to do. I'm reluctantly going to wrap this up. Ryan, thanks so much for having us. All the people who are interested to know Ryan a little better should follow him on LinkedIn. I think his LinkedIn profile is here in the description. And you are doing some new things on LinkedIn you want to tell people about.
I've got a brand new LinkedIn learning course out on November 11th. And it's the title, which I hope you all enjoy, Cultivate a Global Entrepreneurial Mindset in a Remote Working World. And I'm just so honored and excited that they approached me put a course like this together, because I did this course and you can hopefully see the passion that I had doing it, and it's a conversational style, is because I wish somebody would have told me these things, that I didn't need more of these resources. I didn't have the resources to go do these things, to gain global experience in those things. And this is some of the ways and tips that I did it. And I think you can easily do it too. And I'm just happy to kind of share it, where you can learn these skill sets without even getting on a plane, and you could do it in front of your computer.
There you have it. Ryan's giving away a little piece of himself for anybody who can connect through LinkedIn. Ryan, send me the link for the course and I'll put it on the description for the podcast here.
Yeah. And then I think to the audience, feel free to follow. I think the best way, you know, because I've got quite a few, you know, connections always
max. Ryan's tail every day.
So feel free to follow and then send me, if you feel like, send me a DM and I'll always respond to the DM. The connection requests are kind of at the max limit. That's good. But I will promise
it may take more than a few minutes, but he'll get back.
Just you know, hit the follow and then send me a DM and I will DM back.
That's fabulous. Well, I also want to say this has been a super pleasure to be with you guys for four podcasts. I'm hoping I'll see you guys again somewhere online. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. I have a website, iaccelerate.tech. I'm always looking for really ambitious startup founders who are going to change the world. And I'd be happy to help get people like Ryan and myself to come along and help you achieve those goals. So I guess that's it, though. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Full Scale. helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Find Full Scale on Instagram at Startup Hustle Podcast. Check out the YouTube channel, and we will see you on the internet.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.